This is my second year as an APHA member in the disability section, but my first year to present, so I'm really excited to be here and to be presenting to all of you. So my presentation today is looking at access barriers to primary care experienced by people with mobility disabilities, but more specifically, this presentation is going to focus on why those barriers exist. This presentation is a very small part of my dissertation, so trying to narrow that big document down to 18 minutes here. So I have no relationships to disclose. So in 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act became a federal civil rights law that prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities. Title II of the ADA prohibits discrimination in public entities. So when we're thinking in terms of healthcare, a public entity would be like a county-sponsored hospital or a county-run clinic. Title III of the ADA prohibits discrimination in private entities that offer goods and services to the public. So again, when we think about that in terms of healthcare, we're talking about like a for-profit hospital or a private practice. Both Title II and Title III of the ADA require that healthcare providers ensure that their patients with disabilities have full and equal access to their healthcare services and facilities, or that reasonable modifications are made to policies, practices, and procedures to allow for full accessibility. However, even though the ADA has been a federal civil rights law for 22 years, we know that people with disabilities experience unmet healthcare needs. For example, women with disabilities, in particular women with mobility disabilities, are significantly less likely to have had a PAP, a breast exam, or a mammogram. We've seen that in a number of studies. We can add Nancy's study to that list. And I think if our first presenter would have been here, we would have added her study to that list as well. I mean, this is something that we've seen over and over again. In one study in particular, women with lower extremity disabilities they're 40% less likely to have had a PAP and 30% less likely to have had a mammogram when compared to women patients without disabilities. Other studies have also found that people with disabilities are significantly less likely to have seen their dentist, to have their teeth cleaned. Some have found that they're less likely to have their height or weight checked, their cholesterol checked, or to have had a tetanus shot. And people with disabilities report a higher odds ratio for being dissatisfied with the quality of health care that they receive. There have been a number of studies, qualitative studies, with people with disabilities to try to understand, okay, well, we know that there are these unmet health care needs. Well, why are there? What's going on? What are the barriers to service? And so really three major categories of barriers have emerged from those studies. Those include personal, cultural, financial, and structural. And this presentation and my study and my dissertation really focused on the structural barriers to accessing healthcare that people with disabilities experience. So what are those structural barriers? Well, that includes inadequate disability parking, lack of ramps or ramps that are too steep, narrow hallways and doorways or doors that are too heavy to open, cramped waiting in exam rooms, inaccessible restrooms, exam tables that don't adjust, they're not height adjustable so they won't lower to the height of a wheelchair, scales that won't accommodate a wheelchair, or inaccessible diagnostic equipment. This has been recognized as an important issue both in Healthy People 2010 and Healthy People 2020. Healthy People 2010 has a statement that for people with disabilities to have the opportunity for healthy lives, both physically and emotionally, programs and facilities that offer wellness and treatment services must be fully accessible. And then when we look at Healthy People 2020, a new objective has been added to that, which is to reduce the proportion of people with disabilities reporting delays in receiving periodic or primary preventative services due to a specific barrier. So even 20 years after the ADA became a federal civil rights law, to date no study has been conducted to really try to understand why those structural barriers continue to exist. This creates a gap in our literature, it creates a gap in our knowledge, and it creates a gap in our ability to create effective policy. How can we make an effective policy to reduce the number of structural barriers if we don't know why those barriers exist? So the purpose of this part of my dissertation, or this part of the study that I'm presenting today, was to begin to understand reasons why structural barriers exist that limit access to healthcare for patients with disabilities. And really what I wanted to look at were the characteristics of primary care practice administrators, in particular their knowledge of the ADA. And then I also wanted to look at characteristics of the primary care practices themselves. So why were primary care practice administrators selected for this study? Well, practice administrators typically have oversight of clinical operations. So that includes being responsible for the budget, for purchasing equipment, for facility operations, and for patient flow through their clinic. So really, they're the person who's in charge, you know, of ordering the equipment, making sure that, you know, are our doorways big enough, how are our patients getting around in our clinic, and thinking about those sort of things. I selected primary care practice administrators because primary care clinics are typically the entry point into the healthcare system for patients, and they traditionally provide the majority of preventative healthcare services. So for sampling, I surveyed practice administrators who belong to a large healthcare management organization, and those administrators who self-identified as being primary care administrators were invited to participate in the survey. They were invited through the management organization's online communication e-portal. So I was able to go to that group, the primary care practice administrator group, and send them an invitation to participate in the survey with a link to the survey. The survey was an online survey. The survey was constructed using the ADA construction guidelines, the ADA's Access to Medical Care for Individuals with mobility disabilities. It was published in 2010. The Adaptive Environments Checklist for Existing Facilities and other published literatures. And questions that were included in the survey were demographic questions, questions that assessed the accessibility of the structure of the clinic. So questions were asked about accessibility all the way from the parking lot into the exam room. So number of disability parking places compared to other parking places, ramps, elevators, width of doors, width of hallways, etc. Then I also asked questions to assess the practice administrator's just general knowledge of the ADA. Data was analyzed using a Gutman scale, linear regression, and multiple linear regression. So just a descriptive statistics or description of our participants. The practice administrators, their mean age was 50 years. Majority of them were female. 70% of the practice administrators were female. On average, they had 15 years of experience as an administrator, and they had an average of 6 years of being administrator in their current practice. As far as educational attainment, 35% of the practice administrators reported having a bachelor's degree, and 48% of them reported having a master's degree. Then we'll talk about characteristics of the practice or descriptives of the practice. On average, the practices had 12.7 providers in the practice. They had an average number of 30,000 patients, though there was a wide variety in the number of patients. We had some small practices with 10 and some super huge practices with 100, so the standard deviation is pretty big for that variable. On average, 7.8% of their patients they identified as being patients with disabilities. We asked a question about whether their practice operated in a building built before 1993 or after 1993. Although the ADA became a federal civil rights law in 1990, it began requiring that new construction or buildings being built after 1993 were compliant with the ADA. So buildings built before 1993 didn't have that requirement. So I wanted to know if there's a difference based on when the building was built. And then lastly, type of practice. OBGYN definitely was the majority of the type of practice. As far as categories of practices that we consider primary care, that included family medicine, internal medicine, general medicine, OBGYN, and sort of an other category. So looking at the mean or the total number of barriers and their practice administrators' ADA knowledge, the mean number of barriers identified in their clinic in the clinics were 4.3 with a standard deviation of 2.2. The mean ADA knowledge on a scale of 0 to 9 was 5.7 with a standard deviation of 1.7. So the first thing I did was just a simple linear regression because I really was intrigued by because of my experience being a healthcare administrator and a lot of experiences I had working in healthcare over 15 years. I really wanted to know this relationship between a person's knowledge of the ADA, the practice administrator's knowledge of the ADA, the person in charge of the clinic, if they knew about the ADA, and the number of barriers found in the clinic. So the simple linear regression model was significant with knowledge being a significant variable. And the equation that's generated from this linear regression, you can see that there's a negative beta coefficient for total ADA knowledge. So that means there's an inverse relationship between the practice administrator's knowledge of the ADA and the number of barriers that they reported having in their clinic. So the more they knew about the ADA, the fewer the barriers, the less they knew, the more barriers were found in their clinics. So then I did this kind of a sequence of multiple linear regression. First, I looked at the characteristics of the practice administrator. So again, those variables were their ADA knowledge, their gender. Their age and years and the number of years they had been a practice administrator were highly correlated. So I only used age as a variable to keep from having multicollinearity in my model. Years at their current practice and highest educational attainment. And then I also modeled for characteristics of the practice, which include number of years the practice had been in operation, whether they practiced in a building built before or after 1993. The number of patients and the number of providers was highly correlated, so I just used the number of patients, percent of patients with disabilities, and then practice type, whether it be general, OBGYN, family, or internal medicine. Then for the final multiple linear regression, I took those characteristics of the practice administrator that were significant when I just modeled for practice administrator characteristics, and those characteristics of the practice that were significant when I modeled for characteristics of the practice and used those in the final regression model. The final model was significant with ADA knowledge, the age of the administrator, and buildings built before 1993 being significant predictors of the numbers of barriers found in the clinics. And then the final equation developed from this multiple linear regression model, we can see that the beta coefficient for buildings built before 1993 is positive. So if the clinics operated in buildings built before that, it was required that buildings be compliant with the ADA for new construction, they had a higher number of barriers. ADA knowledge is still a negative beta coefficient, so ADA knowledge increased, number of barriers decreased. And then the age of the administrators had a negative beta coefficient. So the older the practice administrator was, the lower the number of barriers I found in their clinics. So, I recognize that, my N was 63, so it's a pretty small sample size. But, this study, I think, at least helped us begin to understand, maybe why we still see these barriers to accessing healthcare, despite having a law that prohibits it. And maybe it will help us begin to be able to target interventions to improve that, to reduce the number of barriers. For example, if we want to target an intervention, we might want to look at practices that are in older buildings, so buildings built before 1993. That may be a really good place to begin and really make a big impact and decrease the number of structural barriers in those clinics. We might also want to target younger administrators or administrators who haven't been administrators for very long, since age and number of years as an administrator were highly correlated. Or we might want to target administrators that have a low level of ADA knowledge. Definitely, from my study and sort of what I had hypothesized is that knowledge is a key in this situation. If knowledge of the ADA increased, the number of barriers decreased. However, there are very few educational programs that exist that provide disability training for healthcare professionals. This leaves practice administrators as well as other health professionals like physicians and nurses and occupational therapists and physical therapists with little to no knowledge about how to best care for or accommodate their patients with disabilities. So areas for improvement, we can work on practice administrators and healthcare providers in general, this is their general knowledge of the ADA and how it applies to their healthcare practice. We can provide them information with issues that people with disabilities experience. We're trying to access all of healthcare services. Now we found that some healthcare services people with disabilities are more likely to participate in, like maybe flu shots and pneumonia vaccinations. But when it comes to women with disabilities and doing those really important preventative cancer screenings, we see a lot of barriers to that. and how it impacts their patients as well as the providers. You know, providers not being able to do a quality exam, that impacts them as well. And so we need to look at it from both of those situations. And lastly, that being compliant with the ADA is a legal requirement. It's not a choice. You can't make a choice simply based on economics or number of patients or whatever. Not included in this presentation, I did ask them a question about, you know, the number of patients in their practice being large enough or sufficient to offset the cost of bringing their practice into compliance. And I had one practice administrator who said, you know, no, it's actually more economical for me to not have patients with disabilities than to modify my practice to make it accessible. Well, that's not an option. That's not your choice. This is a law, and you have to be compliant. And that's, I think, really where a lot of education needs to take place with practice administrators. Limitations, definitely were some limitations in this study. Again, we had a small sample size, and we also had a low response rate. Practice administrators, pretty difficult group to get to volunteer to participate in a study. One of the reasons may be that practice administrators who knew that their practice wasn't in compliance self-selected and decided, you know, I'm not going to answer questions about, you know, ADA and what's in my doorways and hallways when I know I'm not in compliance. And you say this is confidential, but I'm not sure that it's going to be, you know, so there may have been some reluctance to participate. And that may have underestimated the number of barriers that we found. It was a self-report study, so that's always subject to self-report bias. Practice administrators may have answered what they thought were socially acceptable, you know, answers. Well, of course I have an exam table that lowers, you know, of course I have, you know, ways to accommodate patients with disabilities. Then there's also this issue of perceived accessibility versus actual accessibility. A study was published recently where, you know, first they asked primary care managers, you know, their perception of accessibility in their clinic. And based on their perception, their clinics were pretty accessible. And then they had a rehabilitation engineer actually go in and measure the accessibility in their clinics. And there was a big difference between what the practice administrators thought, you know, how accessible they thought their practice was and how accessible it really was. The practice administrators who answered this survey were all across the United States, so there's no way that I could go and actually physically measure, you know, those things. So I kind of take them at their word. So there could be some of that that happened in this study. I only looked at primary care clinics. I didn't look at cardiology or orthopedics or any other practice type. So, you know, this certainly can't be applied or generalized to any other practice type. And this was a cross-sectional study, so causation cannot be determined. So in conclusion, unmet healthcare needs and the resulting health disparities that people with disabilities experience is a public health concern. ADA knowledge was a significant predictor of the number of barriers. And I think that through disability education, we could help to improve ADA knowledge, decrease the number of barriers, increase participation in preventative services by people with disabilities, and decrease the health disparities experienced by people with disabilities. Thank you.
Okay. I thought that was very exciting. I think many of us in this room have appreciate the work on maps and other data sources that tell us about barriers and problems and access, but it's really nice to hear somebody go out and survey people who are critical in that chain of access. Administrators are a group that we really need to understand. And although there are limitations, it's, I think, an extremely important contribution to the literature. So we're happy to have that presented today.